Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during our Q&A session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note today's call is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Wendy Felice. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lindy, and thank you to everyone for joining us. This is Wendy Felice with the American Immigration Council. Thanks for joining. I want to let you know that the legal filings, the FAQ, and the fact sheet that we're releasing today that is based on FOIA data we obtained and are discussing on today's call are now live on our website at AmericanImmigrationCouncil.org. Okay, this call, as the operator said, is being recorded, and I'm going to go ahead and introduce to you the speakers in the order that they'll be speaking today. One of the speakers, Nora Preciado, is available to make comments in Spanish if needed. Once they're done making their comments, we will have a Q&A where we will welcome your questions. The first speaker on today's call is James Lyle. He is a staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union in Arizona. We'll have, after that, Mary Kenny, who is a senior staff attorney at the American Immigration Council. Then Nora Preciado, who is a staff attorney at the National Immigration Law Center, followed by Colette Mayer, who is a partner at Morrison & Forster. So without delay, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to James. James, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Wendy. This is James Lyle with ACLU of Arizona. I'm just going to say a few things about the lawsuit just filed on Monday and provide a little bit of background. And then I will pass it off to my colleagues who will address some of those points in greater detail. At the outset, I will start. On Monday, June 8th, the organizations hosting this call filed a class action lawsuit on behalf of three individuals against the heads of DHS, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and U.S. Border Patrol for the unconstitutional and unconscionable conditions of confinement in Border Patrol's Tucson sector detention facilities. Now, specifically, this case challenges Tucson Sector Border Patrol's practice of detaining men, women, and children, often for days at a time, in unsanitary, frigid, and frequently overcrowded holding cells, commonly referred to as the yaleras, which is Spanish for ice boxes, while denying them medical care, hygiene supplies, access to showers, access to adequate food and water, and while effectively cutting off access to the outside world, including to legal counsel. These practices violate the U.S. Constitution, as well as Border Patrol's own inadequate detention standards. So as an initial matter, I think it's worth specifying what the facilities at issue are and what they're not. Unlike ICE detention facilities, where immigrants can be held for long periods of time, sometimes years at a time, while they fight their immigration cases, Border Patrol hold rooms are supposed to be short-term, and they're designed to be short-term. People apprehended by Border Patrol are not supposed to be held for more than a few hours while they're being processed for transfer or released. In practice, as my colleague Mary Kenny is going to discuss in greater detail in a moment, these facilities are not operated as short-term facilities at all. And in fact, individuals are routinely held for days on end in brutal and inhumane conditions of confinement. CBP operates numerous detention facilities in its Border Patrol stations and substations, forward operating bases, and other facilities in the Tucson sector and around the country. In Tucson sector, there are approximately 8 Border Patrol stations, 1 substation, and approximately 5 forward operating bases, among other facilities, all of them equipped with standard concrete hold rooms, none of which are designed or intended for prolonged detention, and all of which are at issue in this lawsuit. So this case was filed on behalf of two women who were detained at the time the lawsuit was filed on Monday. And one Tucson resident who has been detained by Border Patrol in Tucson sector on multiple occasions and is now released. Our clients are seeking injunctive relief. That's to say they are asking the court to order Border Patrol to implement all necessary reforms to ensure that all detainees are held in constitutionally adequate conditions. And while some prior cases have sought money damages for mistreatment in Border Patrol custody, to my knowledge, this is the first case of its kind in that it seeks a court order to reform, fundamentally reform, Border Patrol's notorious detention facilities. If the court approves our proposed class, this case would apply to anyone who is or will be detained overnight in Tucson sector, which is historically one of the busiest sectors nationwide. The case, therefore, has the potential to impact tens of thousands of men, women, and children every year, among them asylum seekers, victims of sexual violence, and even U.S. citizen children. And just a couple last points, and I will cede the floor. The plaintiff's allegations in this case are consistent with more than 75 declarations gathered by plaintiff's counsel over the past year from former Tucson sector detainees, all of whom very consistently describe the same abuse and neglect in Tucson sector detention facilities. These allegations are also very consistent with thousands of other complaints of mistreatment in Border Patrol detention facilities nationwide. Numerous NGO and U.S. government reports, legal complaints, media accounts have consistently described the problems at issue in this lawsuit, going back many years and affecting literally hundreds of thousands of people. So these abuses are no secret, and indeed they are no secret to the defendants in this case. Despite being aware of and even acknowledging these problems exist, Border Patrol has done essentially nothing to respond. In response to a complaint submitted last summer on behalf of over 100 unaccompanied immigrant children, CBP Commissioner Gil Kerlikowske acknowledged that those children's complaints regarding Border Patrol custody conditions were, quote, absolutely spot on. And DHS itself subsequently acknowledged, quote, recurring problems with those facilities and those conditions. Nonetheless, the government has not taken any significant action to meaningfully remedy these problems, these abuses, and that inaction is unfortunately all too consistent with Border Patrol's now notorious culture of abuse and impunity. However, with the filing of this lawsuit, it's no longer going to be possible for Border Patrol to continue denying and ignoring its inhumane and unconscionable mistreatment of individuals in its custody, and the agency is now going to have to defend those practices in a court of law. And with that, I will pass it on to Mary Kenny, who will speak in a little more detail about the length of detention that individuals experience in these facilities.
Great. Thank you, James. Good afternoon, and thank you all for joining us today. I'm Mary Kenny with the American Immigration Council. In a few minutes, we will be discussing in more detail the conditions to which people are routinely subjected in these holding cells within the Tucson sector. Before we get to that, though, I did want to provide some additional context for the detention. And the first point I want to emphasize is that the scale of CBP detention is really enormous. CBP detains hundreds of thousands of individuals. We received data in response to a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, from CBP that indicated that in the first 6 months of 2013, the Tucson sector of Border Patrol detained over 72,000 individuals. So that was a six-month period, one Border Patrol sector out of dozens of sectors. Even considering variations that may exist between the sectors and from year to year, it's clear that CBP carries out a massive detention operation. Second, as James indicated, it's a misnomer for CBP to call these short-term holding cells. Their guidance indicates that the anticipated norm for holding a person in these cells is 12 hours or less. Consistent with this, one of their guides specifically states that the cells are not designed for sleeping and therefore contain no beds. And in fact, they are not designed for sleeping. They really are concrete cells with concrete benches along the walls or running down the middle, and that's and toilets and sometimes a sink, and that's all that's in them. The FOIA data that we received contradicts any claim of short-term detention, and that's consistent with the experiences of our plaintiffs and with the dozens of other individuals whom we interviewed. 58,000 people were detained in the Tucson sector in the first 6 months of 2013 for 24 hours or longer. So that's 80% of the total number of individuals detained in that sector during that period. In addition, Many of those individuals were detained longer than 24 hours. There were close to 25,000 individuals, or 34+% of the total, who were detained for 48 hours or longer. And that's obviously individuals, 25,000 individuals who had to sleep on the concrete benches or the concrete floor for two nights or more. 7,839,000, almost 8,000 individuals were detained for 3 days or longer. One of the things that we were struck by in our investigation was the consistency of the reports with respect to all the facilities within the Tucson sector. So it really didn't matter which of the 8 Border Patrol stations that an individual was being held in, their report to us was similar. So essentially what that says to us is that it's a sector-wide issue. It needs to be addressed on a sector-wide basis, which is the reason that we brought the lawsuit on behalf of individuals in any detention facility within the sector. All of the data that I've talked about is posted on our website, along with a fact sheet that contains an explanation of what that data reveals. So I would encourage you to look at that. I'm going to turn it over now to Nora Preciado, who will talk more specifically about the conditions themselves.
Thank you, Mary. Hello, everyone. My name is Nora Preciado. I'm a staff attorney with the National Immigration Law Center. I visited many immigration detention facilities for many years, privately run facilities, ICE facilities, and others. In my experience, the abuses endured by our plaintiffs and scores of other Border Patrol detainees whom I've interviewed in previous visits really rank among the worst I've ever heard. Detainees we talk to describe being held in frigid, overcrowded, filthy cells for days on end and being denied basic necessities like food, water, medical care, and basic hygiene products. The cells in which Border Patrol holds these women, men, and children are called hileras, as we mentioned before, and for a very good reason. Our plaintiff, Jane Doe, one, described having to huddle together on the cold concrete floor to make it through the night. She told us that she didn't know what she would have done without her sister, who provided really the only meager source of heat throughout the night. Many other detainees described needing medical attention, but it never came. Men and women, dehydrated and famished from their journey, were often denied water. And when they did get it, it was almost undrinkable, foul-tasting. Other detainees were given food that was of such poor quality that it made it inedible. Those who dare eat it out of hunger paid the price. It made them sick. Worse yet, this food was given in incredibly small portions, leaving many detainees suffering from hunger as well. After grueling days spent in the desert through their journey to the U.S., detainees are not allowed access to basic hygiene items like soap, toothbrushes, toothpaste, or the ability to shower, or even clean themselves up. Our lawsuit describes children as young as 4 years old, stripped of all warm clothing and left crying through the night from cold and hunger. Detainees sick, exhausted, and shivering, pleading for guards to turn up the temperature in the cells, and agents responding in turn that the harsh conditions are the punishment for coming to the U.S. When one detainee asked agents to help her 7-year-old U.S. citizen daughter, who was in pain from what she believed was an ear infection, an agent told her, "There's no medicine here." Another detainee reported that she did not receive a single clean diaper for her child. She was finally forced to remove her daughter's soiled diaper with nowhere to dispose of it and no replacement available. One woman survived sexual assault during her journey and reported heavy vaginal bleeding while detained. She failed to receive any medical attention at the facility as well. Agents confiscated another woman's pain medication. She was 8 months pregnant and had a broken ankle. The agents told her not to cry because, quote, she was just going to be deported. These conditions aren't just inhumane. They're unconstitutional. U.S. Border Patrol fails to adhere to its own inadequate policies, breaking its own rules as it packs men, women, and children into these filthy, freezing facilities. From the moment people are apprehended, they're treated in a way that can only be described as subhuman. They're stripped not just of their outerwear or medicine. These individuals are stripped of their dignity. This is un-American. We live in a society in which all people, regardless of where they were born or how much money they have, should live free from fear of abuse at the hands of the U.S. government. Unfortunately, as Marion Duff told you earlier, for tens of thousands of people detained by U.S. Border Patrol, this isn't a reality. That's why we filed this lawsuit this week, to stop treatment that isn't just unconstitutional. We're filing today to demand that Border Patrol treat the women, men, and children in their facilities like the people they are. We have more information available on the harrowing stories of all the declarant and our plaintiffs. You can visit our website at www.nilk.org for more information. Colette?
Good afternoon. My name is Colette Mayer. I'm from the law firm Morrison Forrester, and I'm not going to retread a lot of everything that has been said already, but I wanted to give a brief overview of the legal claims we've filed in the complaint. So, as James noted, our legal claims are based on due process violations under the Constitution. Specifically, the men, women, and children that make up our class of plaintiffs have been denied sleep, subjected to unsanitary conditions in these holding facilities, deprived of adequate medical care, deprived of food and water, and deprived of warmth without any due process under the law. The conditions in which these men, women, and children are held in are excessively harsh in relationship to any non-punitive or legitimate purpose. Indeed, in many ways, these people are subjected to conditions that are far worse than even convicted murderers or rapists, and they haven't been convicted of anything. This is especially egregious when you consider, as you just heard from Nora, that young children are also held under these conditions. We've also filed a claim under the Administrative Procedures Act because, as Mary described, the Border Patrol has policies that govern these holding facilities, and they aren't complying with their own policies. For example, the Border Patrol's policies state that men, women, and children held in these facilities must be provided a certain amount of holding space per person, as well as adequate food, water, and medical care. The Border Patrol is ignoring its own policies in all of the short-term detention facilities in the Tucson sector. The lawsuit we filed asks the court to require Border Patrol in Tucson to live up to its own policies. Finally, we filed this as a class action because, as Mary noted, there is an overwhelming number of people who have been and continue to be held under these conditions. As our complaint states, over 200,000 men, women, and children have been apprehended by the Border Patrol in the Tucson sector in the past 2 years alone. And these conditions are going on without any intervention right now. So I turn it back to Wendy now.
Thank you so much, Colette. We're going to go ahead and turn it over to the Q&A process, but I just wanted to remind you many quotes from the declarations, the complaint, an FAQ backgrounder, as well as the fact sheet on the FOIA data about length of detention is on both NILC.org and AmericanImmigrationCouncil.org websites. So, Lindy, can you go ahead and take us through the Q&A process?
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove your question from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys now. And we'll take our first question from Howard Fisher with Capital Media Services. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call, and I've been looking at the complaint. I guess my question comes down to legal points here, and perhaps the attorney from Morrison would be best to answer that. You know, there are some Fifth Amendment claims here, but a lot of this comes down to whether what's reasonable given the circumstances, given, as you say, the 200,000 people who are apprehended and this glut. So where does the reasonableness of fit into this, given the crush of migrants crossing the border?
Thank you for your question. Who wants to take that question first?
I'm happy to take a crack at it, and others can join in.
Thanks, Colette.
Yeah, sure. I don't think anybody on the call would say that there isn't a large number of immigrants crossing the border. The question is whether or not people are entitled to basic constitutional rights and what the government can do that would abrogate those rights. And the Supreme Court has repeatedly held that everyone in the country is entitled to some basic constitutional rights, and these people are being deprived of due process rights. You could say, you know, we could have a tiny, tiny place to hold everybody all at once and jam them all in there because we have so many people coming over and there's space considerations. But there's baselines of what people think is appropriate, and even the Border Patrol's own policies recognize that detainees should be provided a certain amount of space. So I think their own recognition that these are reasonable requests, it's a pretty small ask, I think, on our part. But others can join in.
Okay. If there's nothing else, we can go to the next question, operator.
And we'll take our next question from Bob Ortega with Arizona Republic. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Just two things. One, could you guys, I'm not seeing this yet, but the spelling on some of your names, just want to make sure we've got them all straight, like Colette Mayer. And then my question is this. So you guys requested this information and filed the suit in Tucson. Mr. Lyle referred to this a minute ago in his comments, but the biggest crossing point right now is in the Rio Grande Valley. Do you guys, I'm taking it that you filed here in the Tucson sector because you had already done a lot of groundwork there. Is there any reason to think that the conditions, my question is there any reason to think that the conditions in the Rio Grande Valley are significantly different or better? Is that something that you guys have also looked at?
Thanks, Bob. Before we answer that, I just want to let you know I've just emailed you the names with correct spellings, and who wants to take the Rio Grande Valley portion of the question?
I can take a shot at that. You're absolutely right, Mr. Ortega, that we did file in Tucson because we had been doing our investigation there, and that's where we had the information and had been, you know, carrying out the detailed work in preparation for filing the suit. What we have heard about anecdotally about what's happening in the Rio Grande Valley is that the conditions are not significantly different, and we think that this is a widespread problem that does go beyond the Tucson sector alone. At this point, our lawsuit is only focused on the Tucson sector. We would hope that if it brings about change, that those changes will be implemented by CBP nationally, that it will bring about a change in standards that applies throughout the country, not simply to the Tucson sector.
Thanks, Mary. Does anybody else want to comment on the Rio Grande Valley?
Yeah, this is Nora Preciado with NILC. Just briefly to say that NILC attorneys have visited some of those facilities in Texas in the sector you were talking about, and the conditions are just as horrific there as they are in the Tucson sector. They've spoken to people who have been in those facilities, and we are seeing very consistent descriptions of the way men, women, and children are being held in those facilities.
Thanks, Nora. Okay, let's go ahead and go to our next question, operator.
And we'll take our next question from Ray Stern with Phoenix New Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. Thank you for the conference call today. Two quick questions. So the first question is, what would be potentially a quick fix for this? Do you guys have any ideas for would there be potentially transfers to another facility? Should they be put up in hotels? You know, or what maybe is an idea that could fix this immediately? Should cots be brought in? My other question is related to the temperature there. We heard a lot about this when the youth immigrants were coming in, and it's a problem that's obviously air conditioning related. So do you have any idea what is the thermostat set at to make these cold conditions occur, and what should the thermostat be set at so that people are, you know, the workers there are reasonably cool from the heat, and the immigrants are not complaining about the cold?
Thank you. Who wants to take a shot at that?
Sorry, if no one. This is Nora again. So a couple of, I think those are all really good questions, and just a couple of things that I wanted to note. It could be as simple as stop detaining women and children, for starters. Some of the fixes that we're talking about, and this is what shocks the conscience, are very easy. We are talking about not providing soap, showers, adequate meals, drinking water. Those things are not, you know, and Border Patrol has been aware of these conditions for many, many years, and they continue to go unabated. And then in terms of the, you know, where people sleep, they can follow their own rules that dictate the number of hours that they can keep people at those facilities. So those are some quick ways. And again, the shocking thing is that even those easy things to fix have not happened yet.
Thank you, Nora. Did anybody else want to add anything, or should we go to the next?
This is James. I would just, James Lyle with ACLU, I would just add, I mean, last summer when there were a large number of unaccompanied children coming in, I visited a Nogales facility that Border Patrol had set up, a warehouse facility that had FEMA equipment, ICE equipment. There were multiple agencies providing resources to provide increased levels of adequate conditions for those children. And it seems at least an implicit acknowledgement that Border Patrol was not ordinarily providing those basic minimums, which in our position are still inadequate. I mean, the quick fix would be to follow their own policies, and they're not doing that. Those policies are still constitutionally inadequate. The fact of the matter is the agency has to do a whole lot more to provide a constitutionally minimum level of care to the people in its custody that's required. As far as the temperature, you know, what should it be? All I can say is that these facilities are referred to as the hileras for a reason. People are systematically stripped of any outer layer of clothing they may have, including we documented children as young as 4 years old having jackets taken from them, being put into these cells in T-shirts. And all of them, almost just an unbelievable number, consistently describe being freezing cold, of lying on floors that felt like ice. Those complaints are so consistent. For the agency to do nothing in response to them for years, I think really demonstrates the lack of regard that this agency has for the people in its custody.
Thank you, James. Let's go to the next question, operator.
And our next question comes from Maria Pena with La Pena. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, I was wondering what response you got from the CPB. I've been trying to get their reaction, and I know in the past that they have said that they are providing adequate care to these detainees. So I was wondering what they've got to say about this. Thank you.
This is James again. I can just say, I mean, our view is that at this point, this is not an agency whose word can be taken at face value. This is not an agency with that kind of credibility, that blanket statements that in response to charges of abuses, of civil rights abuses, of detention conditions that are constitutionally adequate, for them to simply respond and say, well, they are, everything's fine. I mean, I'm not sure how many more scandals this agency needs to endure before blanket statements like that are just not taken at face value. I mean, they routinely say they don't hold people for extended periods of time. Their own records, as Mary explained, indicate exactly the opposite. So I would view with great skepticism those kinds of blanket sweeping claims that the agency regularly makes in response to charges of civil rights abuse.
Thanks, James. We have a lot of questions, so let's just keep moving through them. Operator, can you take the next one?
Our next question comes from Linda Valdez with the Arizona Republic. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I have two questions. I have a process question. What happens next? You filed the lawsuit. What's the next step in the legal process of getting this resolved? And my other question has to do with your comments. Several of you have made comments that this is punitive and that Border Patrol agents have indicated that it's punitive, and I wish you could expand on that a little bit.
I want to take that first, and then the next step.
I can address the next step. We did, simultaneous with the filing of the complaint, we did file a motion for class certification, and that will be defendants, the CBP and the other defendants, will be required to respond to that within a certain amount of time. And so that really is kind of the next step. There are some other things that we may file in the near future, but the biggest one will be the decision on the motion for class certification.
This is James on the point about the punitive conditions. We feel that the punitive nature of these detention conditions is very much the result of the government's inhumane border enforcement strategy overall. And that is a strategy which seeks to discourage migration, future migration, by imposing quote-unquote consequences. You know, the Border Patrol has this consequence delivery system. Is the name of their policy, where they seek to impose consequences, which another way of saying suffering, on immigrants in order to deter future migration. And that includes driving people into the deadliest regions of the desert. It includes warehousing them in private prisons after prosecuting them for entry and reentry, and in this case, brutalizing them in detention conditions. And I think when you hear time and again agents telling detainees that this is the price to be paid for coming to the U.S., and this is what they get, and if they don't like it, they shouldn't come back, I think that sounds like agents internalizing that overall border enforcement rationale of deterrence.
Yeah, and this is Nora with NILC. And just more specifically, we do have declarants who talked about the guards, you know, responding to requests keep temperatures a little warmer by being told, like, you know, shut up, we're going to make it colder instead, or if you don't quit talking, we're going to make it even colder. So what Jane was talking about, there is this sort of, like, attitude about they are there to be punished for coming to this country in search of a better life.
Thank you, guys. Let's go to the next question.
And our next question comes from Lomi Creel with Houston Chronicle. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Just wanted to expand on Bob's question. This is focused on Tucson, but what could be the impact for the rest of the country, and how soon, if anything?
Mary, do you want to take that?
Sure. The lawsuit is specifically for the brought against the Border Patrol's Tucson sector and the officials in charge of that sector. But it, as I indicated before, we think that whatever standards apply in Tucson should apply everywhere, and we're hoping that down the road the CBP, if forced to change in Tucson, will implement those same changes throughout the country.
This is James. I would just add that, you know, a basic point is that it shouldn't take a class action lawsuit for the government to treat people in a humane manner, to provide a constitutionally minimal level of care to those in its custody. It shouldn't take a lawsuit in one sector or nationwide. The government, as I said, has been aware of these problems, has acknowledged these problems for a very long time, and they haven't done anything. I think that's a good question for the federal government. Why haven't they cleaned up their act a long time ago, and do they have any plans to make the needed changes, not just in Tucson sector, but nationwide?
Excellent. Thank you so much. All right, can we go to the next question, operator?
Absolutely. First, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll go next to Kurt Prendergast with Nogales International. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, I just had a question. You know, we're down in Nogales, and I wanted to know, with all this data, how much of this is happening at the Nogales station, and are there any complaints that are unique to the Nogales station or complaints that you heard frequently from the Nogales station?
We heard the same complaints from people who were formerly detained in Nogales at the Border Patrol station as we did from all the other Border Patrol stations. So the same conditions, the freezing cold, the filthy cells, the lack of any bedding, the inadequate and insufficient food and water. It was pretty consistent throughout.
Okay, great. Next question.
We'll go next to Barbara Villa with Arizona News Radio. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you so much. Of course, the object of the lawsuit is injunctive relief, but I was wondering if we can talk about this in terms of any meaningful compensation given the vast number of victims. We've got, from what I understand, tens of thousands, and that may be conservative. But can we talk about that in terms of actual compensation? Is that part of this lawsuit, too?
Who wants to take that?
This is Colette. I can say our claim is for injunctive relief. We don't currently have a claim for damages, but that our claim is to try to get this stopped now.
This is James. I would just add that, you know, of the dozens of people we've spoken to, current and former CBP detainees, none of them expressed an interest in receiving monetary compensation. They all, almost all of them, consistently said that they were interested in the government treating people with dignity, with basic dignity, and recognizing their basic human dignity. And they wanted that for others, and that's why they were willing to come forward either as plaintiffs or as declarants.
Thank you, James. Operator, we'll take the next question.
And we'll go next to David Morgan with the Cochise County Record. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning from the border near Naco, Arizona. Perhaps it's in the support documentation online, but could you tell me how we could identify, I think you said, 8 holding facilities in the Tucson sector, and how many are they designed to hold, and typically how many are they holding at one time?
Can I just remind the speakers before you speak to say who you are before you answer the question? Who wants
I apologize. David Morgan with the Cochise County Record.
Oh, David, I actually didn't mean you. I actually meant the speakers. Thank you, David.
Oh, sorry, got it. Thank you.
For the reporter's benefit, please state your name, speaker, and then who wants to take the first, who take on this question?
I can answer it. This is Mary Kenny with the American Immigration Council. We have identified the stations. They are listed in the complaint specifically. They're also, you can find them on CBP's website. It does list all stations within the Arizona sector of the Border Patrol. In terms of numbers for each station, we did ask for that information in the FOIA. It wasn't specifically broken down. They didn't indicate which station held how many people. And so it's information that we plan to pursue further in a further administrative and possibly legal challenge to the FOIA.
This is Nora. Just quickly to add to what Mary was saying, in terms of the actual cells or the anecdotal and declarant, the evidence that we have, they describe looking at the capacity numbers posted in the cells and far exceeding those numbers. So while we don't have numbers that tell us how many people were held at once or what the capacity is in those aggregate numbers, we have repeated accounts of folks who say, you know, the cell said it can only hold 20 and there were about 40 of us crammed in there and many other instances of overcrowding, severe overcrowding.
All right, next question.
And our next question comes from Paul Ingram with TucsonSentinel.com. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Paul Ingram with the Tucson Sentinel. Quick question about the numbers that you gained from the FOIA. Was that done just for 2013, or did you also do it for 2014 and 2012?
Those numbers from the FOIA were only for 2013. For a six-month period, January through June of 2013.
Thank you, Mary. Next question, operator.
And we'll go next to Howard Fisher with Capital Media Services. Please go ahead.
As we go through this, I end up with a few more questions.
Let me give you the three that I can. Number one, I know the question earlier was about Rio Grande, but obviously the other concern in Arizona is the humus sector. What have you found there? Number two is why the need for Jane Doe's on the thing, since it would seem that, you know, if they'd been through the system and everything else, the Border Patrol would know who they are. And number three goes to the legal issue. I know the attorney said that, you know, the first step is getting the class action. It would seem to me that, you know, that will take a while. Why not go for some sort of TRO in the interim?
Who wants to go first?
This is Gene. I don't have any really satisfying answers for you there, Howie. I mean, so we are, as Mary, I think, mentioned, our investigation was focused on Tucson sector, not on Yuma sector, although, again, the experiences of our organizations, many other organizations, totaling literally thousands of complaints nationwide, have very consistently described these inhumane, indeed brutal detention conditions. But we didn't have a specific investigation into Yuma sector. You know, as far as the legal questions, including why Jane Doe and next steps, I mean, I don't think we're really at liberty to discuss legal strategy and some of those questions at this time. The case was just filed. And, you know, we will be moving forward with all due diligence, but, you know, at this time we don't have a lot more to say about those questions.
Thanks, James. Operator, let's take the next question.
And we'll go next to Bud Foster with KOLD-TV Tucson. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay. Thank you very much for this conference call. My question is at what point do you say that the problem is solved? What's the standard for compliance of Border Patrol's own regulations? No complaints at all, maybe a few complaints, some complaints. What's the standard for compliance that you seek?
Who wants to take that question?
This is Colette. I can say at a minimum, I think it's been mentioned before, but at a minimum compliance with their own policies, we would say that those policies are still unconstitutional, but as I said before, it's a pretty quick fix to give people soap. And as James noted, there are ways to give people beds if they're being held for longer than the policies are allowing these facilities to be holding people. But at a minimum, compliance with their own policies, that won't be the end of it. But that, I think, is a good first step.
Anybody else want to add to that? I'll ask the operator then if there's any more questions.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our next question from Cedar Anastasio with the Latin Times. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
They might be on mute.
Might be on mute, yeah.
Yeah, I think I was muted, sorry. This is Cedar Altanashi with the Latin Times. And this goes back to the, you know, what is the solution, what is the end goal question, which I don't think has been totally addressed. And I wanted to know what is a detention facility that you see as ideal, even if it's not a border one? I mean, is there one in Vermont that meets these standards? Is there anybody at CBP who can say, look, this is how easy it is to get soap? Or is everyone across the border sort of in violation of their own policies?
Who wants to take that?
Well, there are detention standards from other contexts that I think we can draw on to answer those questions. And we certainly will be employing experts to do that in the future. So we can't point to a specific facility in Vermont or wherever, but we, you know, can say that there's been a tremendous amount of work done in the context of prison conditions as to what meets constitutional standards, and we can draw on those standards and apply them to this situation.
Thank you, Mary. Does anybody else want to add to that before we take our next question? Okay, operator, we'll take our next question.
Okay, we'll go to Paul Ingram with TucsonSentinel.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul Ingram at TucsonSentinel.com, and I just wanted to ask you a quick question. When you did the, I'm sorry, I missed out on the FOIA, but why not also get FOIA for 2012, the rest of 2013, and 2014?
This is Mary. We did the FOIA, so I can answer that. We were wanting to give a period of time that we thought was reasonable from which to get the records, and reasonable to get them with some, you know, within a reasonable amount of time, that it wouldn't take the agency a super long time to do it. And so we did limit it to a six-month period, thinking that that would be representative of a representative sample.
Thanks, Paul. And Paul, I'm happy to put you in touch with folks here at the American Immigration Council if you want to talk more after the call about the FOIA and dig a little deeper. Operator, do we have any more questions?
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone at this time. And it appears we have no further questions. I'd like to turn the call back to our speakers for closing remarks.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining the call today. We will, again, have everything available on our websites, AmericanImmigrationCouncil.org and NILC.org. And I just want to offer the speakers to say, is there anything that anybody feels like we missed or that they want to say? If not, I also want to let you know you can be in touch with me, and I'm happy to put you in touch with all of the speakers after the call to answer further questions, including questions in Spanish. This is Wendy Feliz, and my email is wfeliz@mcouncil.org. My number is 202-507-7524. Thank you all very much for joining the call today. We appreciate your time.